You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are. Sweat, Snot and Teary types, what's happening? I'm teary with joy, as we've just found out that the podcast is ranking as one of the top parenting podcasts in the UK. And we're over the moon. Thank you all for listening and for your lovely ratings and reviews. Please do keep them coming. And use them to tell us which other guests you'd love us to feature. Wendy, who would you like us to have on that we haven't had already?
I'm aiming high. I want Michelle Obama.
Oh, man. So do I.
Do you think she'd come on? I don't think so, but we can aim high.
We can aim high. Okay, enough of the wishful thinking, though. Let's give thanks for today's guest. It's Katie Piper. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And congratulations on your new job, host of Songs of Praise. That's a big job.
Yeah, it's a bit of a bucket list for me, actually. You know, it's kind of a bit of an institution. I think most people remember it on, at least even in the background, every Sunday growing up.
Yes, it reminds me of not having done my homework.
Yeah, hair wash night. Yeah,
hair wash, finding your school uniform in a dirty pile from Friday, that kind of feeling.
Yeah, sounds like my life now for my kids, actually. Yeah.
So are you excited?
Yeah, I've already done my first shoot, and that actually TX last week. So yeah, it's been brilliant. And it's kind of like a roaming reporter role where I actually go out to connect with people and meet people and travel around the country. So yeah, it's the kind of thing that I love doing. So it's you know, whenever you get to do jobs that are sort of fulfilling your passion as well as being a job, it's a great feeling and a moment of gratitude that you're doing something you love.
Yeah, because lots of people don't get to do that, do they? They're going to jobs to pay bills and that's about it. So it's a real honour, isn't it, to do something that you really love?
Yeah, it is. And especially, you know, for me, I am, you know, I identify as a Christian. So also, you know, there's that side that, you know, connecting with other people that may have either been brought up as a Christian or actually found faith later on in life. It's really good to have that common ground and share what for us is quite a joyful feeling.
I was going to ask you that, actually, Katie. The role has obviously linked in part to your faith that you found in adulthood. So can you tell us how that happened and how you live it in your everyday life now?
Yeah, so I was brought up it's not an atheist family, my family, but it was like Christian values without the title. So we weren't christened, we didn't go to church. And then I just kind of identified as sort of, you know, all my general knowledge from RE and celebrating Christmas, and that was where it stopped. And then after I came out of my coma, I was in intensive care after being subjected to an acid attack. I had a nurse that was on the night shift with me, so I was in hospital for like 3 months. So you kind of end up like making a new family with all the healthcare assistants. And there was this one nurse in particular, Alice, and she was Christian. And you know, it's kind of sad, but, you know, she'd probably lose her job for this. But she started to talk to me about her faith. She would pray with me. She would sing to me. She'd hold my hand. She would talk to me about quite deep stuff around the meaning of life and purpose. And it was a real comfort in a dark time. And I kind of had my own experience where I felt something happened to me that told me not to give up and to carry on. And on reflection, I do feel like that was a religious experience with something higher than what we know to be, you know, on earth in our everyday life. And so when I left hospital, I stayed in touch with her. She gave me a Bible. She put her email address at the back of the Bible. I turned up randomly and surprised her in her church one day. And then it inspired me where I'd gone back home to live with my parents. I joined a church and I was going twice a week and I did an Alpha course. And then it just became this huge part of my life. And when I went on to get married, we did a 6-week Christian marriage course to have a Christian wedding. And we've been, you know, 9 years have been together, and it really helped us prepare for marriage and understand each other more. And it's funny because I've always talked about being a Christian, but I feel like people never really picked up on it until I got announced on Songs of Praise. And I feel like that's because people have an image or an idea of what a Christian is, and maybe they think I don't fit that narrative. So that's what I'm most excited about the role, that I hope the people that like my clothes on Instagram and my breakfast you know, might also like some, you know, I'm not trying to evangelize people, but maybe some people have already had some kind of flirtation with religion and thoughts of it and seek comfort in it, but haven't gone any further with it. And maybe they'll come over and whatever, you know, I mean, Christianity is about love thy neighbor and treating people how you want to be treated. So the kind of broad aspects of it are all around kindness and compassion.
And I think Songs of Praise is as mainstream as it gets in that sense, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
So do you think you'd have ended up feeling as you do and believing as you do now if you hadn't been attacked in the way you were and if you hadn't gone through the most traumatic experience and ended up in hospital not knowing what was going to happen to you? Or do you think it really is one of those, this life event happened to me and here I am because of that?
It's such a big question, isn't it? Because it's all about hindsight. And I suppose, you know, nobody knows. And I think for me, how I operate is, you know, I don't believe in luck, coincidence, or just sort of leaving it up to life and see what happens. We're never in control. I believe in God's plan. So I know that everything happened that has happened to me, the good, the bad, whatever, all of it's part of a plan. So when people talk to me about anxiety, that's why I'm able to surrender and understand and take comfort in the fact that we are never in control of our lives. And actually, that's okay. And, you know, if you speak to people that aren't religious and maybe they're just spiritual and they believe in the universe, like they will seek comfort in that and being able to surrender in that way. So, yeah, who knows what would have happened? But I know everything that has happened to me is directive and signals and it's all the plan. So that helps.
Now, as well as being the new host of Songs of Praise, we're big fans of your podcast. You've got your own podcast, Extraordinary People. And I think the reason we love it is that we love the idea of everyone being extraordinary, because something that we've discovered as part of doing this is that everyone has an extraordinary story to tell as long as you kind of scratch beneath the surface. Tell us, who have you loved having on as a guest? And also, who would you like to have that you haven't yet?
Yeah, I mean, the podcast for me is one of my projects that I, you know, really favour out of all the different stuff that I do. And I think, you know, when you do telly, it's a brilliant way to connect with people. But, you know, you're not in the edit and you're not always in control fully of everything. But I think of a podcast, you can drive it, you can drive who you have on there. And I didn't want another celebrity kind of loaded podcast. And I kind of, you know, I hate that question. Who's your favourite celebrity? What celebrity most inspires you? And I think, well, no one, because I find it hard to be inspired by somebody I don't really know and haven't connected with properly. So the whole idea was bring normal people who don't have a platform, but have faced adversity and are just kind of getting on with it and doing amazing things together. So it's run for 2 years and there's been over 60 guests. So to single someone out, I think would be hard because they've had such different stories and such different coping mechanisms. And I suppose the thing is, I always feel like, not the fan, but like the one who's like nodding my head going, oh, right, okay, I should do that. I should apply that to my life. And, you know, I always feel like I'm exploring and investigating with them and learning stuff. So it always feels like a platform where they're kind of teaching me, actually. So it's quite a, you know, it's been quite good in lockdown. It stopped me going crazy and depressed. And, you know, it's been quite cathartic.
Well, I'd also heard that running helped you in lockdown. Is running a newfound thing for you? I can't run. It's just not a thing. So
I like it.
You were very final. I'm not. It's not a thing.
It's not a thing. But Annie discovered running and you've discovered running. And now I just feel left out. So come on, tell me what it is about running that makes you love it. And like, are you 10K? Are you 20K? Are you 2K? What do you do?
Okay, so I'm a lapsed runner. So basically, I got into running years ago. So this is like, I'd been attacked, went to live with mum and dad, recovered, went back to London, got like a one bed flat, was single, trying to like get on with my life. All my friends were like getting mortgages, getting married, and I couldn't even get anyone to text me back. Like, it was just a complete nightmare. So I was quite lonely in the evenings because all my friendship groups had stopped meeting up on a weeknight and stuff because they were homemaking. And I was having difficulties with some unhealthy coping mechanisms of alcohol, and running was like, right, you can't run drunk, so I have to stay.
Well, you can try, but it might go very badly wrong.
Yeah, end up running for hours. So I was like, this is an incentive to not drink every night and not go to a bad place. And I'm also super lonely. So running will help with that loneliness.
Oh, and it's also making I'm not me sad, Katie. I don't like
that.
You know, I just having to run.
Yeah, but it was practical because I didn't want to go to a gym because I found a gym intimidating and I wasn't confident. And I was still wearing a mask on my face. And I was like, well, when people, I run past them in a mask, they look at me weirdly shocked, but it makes you run faster and it's just a moment and I can get away from that embarrassment.
Yeah, it's fleeting, isn't it?
Yeah, whereas in a gym, people do stare at you and it is like sometimes quite difficult socially. So then as my confidence picked up, I then started making it sociable and going to park runs and making friends with people. And that was really cool. And then I got into like half marathons, started running really fast.
My goodness, that's really far. Yeah.
Started being really smug and annoying, like I'd turn up and run and pick the meetings, like, hey guys, I just ran to this meeting, and you know, I was just like super annoying.
You became that running board, didn't you? I can just
I had like a 4-pack abdominals and everything, right? Then I had kids, completely stopped running.
Yeah. Then that ended.
Yeah. And then I was like running on the school run, like out of breath, couldn't handle just running down the road. And then I picked it all back up again in lockdown because I was just like, can't be with my husband all day and have to find a polite
very familiar with that one.
Yeah. I mean, like, Boris, like 1 hour a day. I was like, yes, please. Yes, please.
It's a great me time thing. That's why I love it, because it's the only time when no one can come with you.
Yeah. And also quite nice. Like, I'll put my headphones on and do a podcast and then no work people can contact me. I'll listen to something, you know. I couldn't do half marathons now. I'm too old and tired, but like 10K I could do.
Yeah. And I think it is great for catching up on podcasts, isn't it? Like I now can't imagine running to music. Like I need to listen to Fortunately or whatever it is that I'm listening to that day.
Yeah, I don't listen to music because I sadly now like The Wiggles and I like Frozen and stuff like that now. And that's what we listen to in the car with the kids. But when I'm on my own, it's like educational podcasts for research for work. Sometimes it's audiobooks, sometimes it's funny stuff, just anything grown up and interesting. That's my time.
Anything that isn't Let It Go is what you're trying to tell us, isn't it?
I do like Disney. That's the sad. That would be my preferred choice of music now. I'm brainwashed.
How old are your kids, Katie? Tell us how old they are and tell us a little bit about them.
So two daughters. Eldest is 6. That's Belle. She was 6 in March. And then my youngest, I always call her my baby, but she's getting so heavy. She's not my baby. It's really depressing. She's called P and she's going to be 3 at Christmas. I still have the sling. I keep the sling and I'm like, she's definitely can't go in the sling anymore. She's toilet trained. She uses a dummy and a muslin at night, which I secretly like because that feels babyish.
Yeah.
My 5-year-old still has a muslin at night and she calls it a Zuzzy. That's fine. Zuzzies are allowed.
She'll always be your baby though. Even when she's 60 and you're 90, she'll still be your baby.
I know, but like this, she's even like she still lays on my chest in the breastfeeding chair to rock her to sleep, which is good. But I'm really scared it's starting to go and all the other baby stuff stopping as
Have
well.
Have another one, Katie. Just
There's down. Only one solution.
I want to, but I'm not allowed to, apparently. So,
oh, really? Yeah. Why?
Well, because it's too expensive and we've just got our lives back and we're both working and they're at school and nursery and, and our grandparents are old.
You're like, blah, 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 not listening.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be happy if we had another one, I would, because I just feel like, you know, you've got 2, why not have 10?
Yes. Well, there's quite a few reasons, Katie, but we probably won't go into that.
You won't get your 4-pack back after 10, that's for sure.
No, I'm fine with that. It's okay.
Now, leading on from talking about your kids, I know that Beautiful is probably your most famous book, but I'm very taken with From Mother to Daughter, The Things I Tell My Child. Mm-hmm. Was that very hard to write? Like, it makes me emotional just thinking about it. Was it a struggle to have to kind of think in that way?
Yeah, it was quite sad, some of it, and some of it was actually hilarious because my mum's a retired school teacher and she's super blunt. And so we did it all on email. So we'd write our manuscript and send it to each other, kind of chapter by chapter, so we could read each other's. And she would send me her copy and it was stuff I didn't know. I didn't know she'd felt like that. I didn't know she'd witnessed that. I felt a bit guilty with some of it. And so I'd be like in tears reading it. And then I'd send her mine, which was super loaded and charged of emotion. And she'd just reply like a one-liner saying, you've written 8 books and you don't know the grammatical difference between your and your. You don't even deserve a publishing deal.
I'd just be like, oh my God, mum, it doesn't matter.
Thanks, mum.
Like,
thanks.
2018, we just have like editors and like autocorrect. It's fine. But
I'm waiting and you're telling me that I don't know the difference between them and their mum.
Classic mum, but yeah.
Now, I don't want to lower the tone, but I often think, I would like to sit and write down all of my valuable life tips for my kids in case I was hit by a bus or you never know what's going to happen, right?
Good planning.
Yeah, I like to plan ahead for these things. Wendy will tell you about that. Now, my top tip for flow is always buy a pair of knickers in a size too big because life's too short to wear uncomfortable underwear. That was a tip that someone once gave me and I think it's a very good rule to live by. But if I then try and think of anything more profound, I kind of get a bit stuck. Do you feel pressure to be profound because something traumatic happened to you? I've heard you say that being seen as an inspiration can sometimes feel a bit difficult and it's a bit of an unrealistic pedestal to put you on.
Yeah, and do you know what? Also, it's always well-meaning and it's not meant to be condescending or patronising. But the trouble is, it's sort of like when you applaud a woman for being confident, it's almost as if you're saying she shouldn't be because she doesn't.
Yes, it's like a backhanded narrative. Compliment,
yeah,
isn't it?
It is. Yeah, it's like, you know, if I dress a certain way and they're like, oh, good on you, and you're so confident in your skin. And you're like, well, are you saying I shouldn't be then?
Yes,
and
yes.
It perpetuates this idealistic, like only a certain type of woman should feel good about herself or should be out there putting herself out there and the rest of us should just be ashamed. And if we're not, bloody hell, isn't that amazing? You know, it's difficult. I suppose we're not quite there in like elevating each other and it's meant to be encouraging, isn't it? But
you're so right, it is, but it often feels patronizing rather than encouraging.
And it's hard for my kids. I mean, oh my God, can you imagine what it's going to be like when they're older? Like, they're going to be like, Mum, stop talking about your boring old books. And when you got burnt, like your stupid, boring story, don't care. I'm not going to get burnt like you. You know, like that's how it's going to feel because I'm their mum. You know, it's just, don't really want to ram that down their throat. Like, they know what I do. They understand some, well, the youngest probably doesn't, but the eldest does. And she doesn't really see me as an inspiration because everyone sees their mum.
Well, you're
just
smart,
mum,
aren't you?
Yes, yeah, so I was going to say, do they know? Have you spoken? I know your littlest is your baby and too small, but does your oldest know what's happened and understand? Or are you just, Mum, I need you to wipe my bum?
A bit of both. Like, yeah, I mean, it's always been there. I thought she's always seen me having surgery. She's seen me hit with dressings and bandages and stuff. I mean, it's quite funny. Like, when I was on Strictly, she wasn't supporting me. She was supporting Dr. Ange. And I was just a bit like, he is my competition. But, you know, good to know. But, yeah, she doesn't.
Dr. Ange, if we're all honest about it.
It's a tough crowd, but yeah. So she totally gets what's happened to me and she talks to me about it. She also asks me questions, which is really good. She's really inquisitive and she's really bold in her questioning. So, you know, she can articulate it to other people what happened to me. So I think that's good and that's important. And there's no big reveal. Like, she's always understood and grown up.
That's
with it.
That's good,
and yeah, I prefer that, I think. I doubt she'd even be interested in reading my books, to be honest.
I know. Like, I said to my son the other day, oh, another episode of the podcast is done. He's like, really?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Whatever.
Well, I was saying to the guys before we started recording that my 9-year-old was totally nonplussed by the fact we were recording and just annoyed it meant she couldn't use Netflix because we needed the Wi-Fi.
Classic. Yeah, that's our level of
support. But that's how you want it to be, though, isn't it? You want to be normal old mum. You don't want to be a superhero, really, do you?
No, and also I feel like it's an unnecessary pressure on your children. Like, they don't have to do what you do or achieve what you achieve, and their idea of success might be completely different, and so be it. Good for them.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions we normally ask our guests is to tell us about their births and which of them was the most memorable, and obviously we'd like to hear that from you as well. But something else that I'm kind of intrigued by is, obviously you've had so many operations and medical procedures over the years. Did that add an extra layer of stress to being pregnant and all of the medical appointments you have because you're pregnant anyway? That must have seen, no? Was it quite reassuring to be doing something a bit more normal medically?
Yeah, I mean, people are going to hate me for saying it, but it was a walk in the park. I've never done something so
easy. I can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose at first it was alien concept because I'd only go to hospital for really horrific procedures and bad news. And the midwife appointments were bizarre. Like, you'd go, they'd open your notes, be nice to you, tell you nice things, shut the notes, and then that'd be it. And I'd be like, was that it? And they're like, yeah.
I remember I used to have to take like a half day off work and go. I'd wee in a pot, and they'd go, "That's nice." And then you can go now. But like, I've taken a half day to wee in a pot.
I know. Yeah, it's so crazy. You know, I'm literally used to having terrible news of you're going to have to live with this, and yeah, your eyesight's never going to come back, and this, and you're wearing this for 3 years, you know, and you know, and having to sit in the car park and like digest it all, and that just, you know, nothing ever happened like that. And actually, I know that's a privilege because some people do have incredibly difficult pregnancies and some really terrible things to absorb, and things don't always work out the way you planned. But I was fortunate that, you know, I mean, I had problems because I've got scar tissue internally, so I did have problems, and I had a I kind of knew this would happen. I had to have C-section with both births, but not emergency. It was what they recommended sort of midway through the pregnancy.
And how did they go? Did you enjoy your birth? Did you find them difficult? What stands out?
I suppose really easy because I've had quite a lot of abdominal surgery before, and it's been really horrific, and it's been emergency, and you know, I wasn't able to eat for 2 years. I was on a peg where I had to be injected with fluids and calories rather than eating solids, and I had problems with my teeth after that. So to have abdominal surgery to get a baby at the end rather than just bile and sick was really great.
I can see that.
Yeah, and you know, like when you Google cesarean and people are like, "Oh, I can't stand up," I was just like, no, that it was such a tiny scar compared to all my other scars.
Yeah.
You know, I stood up, I discharged myself that next day. I didn't even find the aftermath of the pain that bad compared to like skin grafts and stuff. So,
and in some ways, did it restore confidence in your body that your body could do something utterly brilliant after you'd had so much tough crap to wade through?
No, because I already had that from surviving the acid attack.
Okay.
You know,
but
I did think, like, isn't this genuinely beautiful? Like, you know, we band around the word beautiful, and what does it mean? And it's like, isn't this amazing that you make this, and there's no imperfections, and it's so innocent? And I think I did find that a little bit overwhelming of when they let you go home and you're like, oh, it's mine and it's up to me. And God, I've got, not with second child, but with first child, it's just like, oh my God, like, you don't you sign something? Or is there any insurance?
No, are you sure no one's going to come with us? Like,
like, you should probably come back with us. Like, I can't even set up like a skybox. Like, how could you trust me?
Yeah. I lose my mobile phone. How am I going to not lose a baby?
It's always joke, where's the manual? But it really is that feeling of I remember getting in the car and shutting the door. And both of us just sitting there with this person in the back going, oh shit, now?
Yeah, and driving so slow.
Over speed bumps. Yeah.
So funny.
I know.
And then we did like weird stuff. Like, we were so inexperienced on the first. Like, we kept her in a Moses basket and carried her around. So we have to get a coffee. We'd carry the Moses basket into the kitchen, get the coffee, carry her back. And then like, we'd leave in the Moses basket till 11 at night. We're watching telly, staring at her. We could have actually put her upstairs in the cot and let her sleep, poor thing. Because we had no routine or structure. We just like, just did whatever and just stared at her constantly. Whereas with the second one, was completely different. But yeah, there's just like a little bit of shock maybe at first, actually, when we're home, I think.
Yeah, I think that's pretty normal.
I was going to ask if your trauma recovery and having to get to grips with so much that you weren't in control of stood you in good stead for life as a new mum, because let's face it, none of us are in control of any of that stuff when it's happened. I was imagining until about 3 minutes ago that you took it all in your stride and didn't sweat the small stuff, but then you started talking about skyboxes, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what? I just never thought I would have a boyfriend ever again. That basic. I never thought I would have sex ever again. So I never even got to thinking I would be a mum. I really didn't even fantasize about it because I just felt like it's closed for me. Don't even bother to fantasize or ponder or anything. So once I was holding her, I was just like, wow, this is so surreal. you know, the pessimist in me was like, she might die, she might get taken away from me because other things like that have happened to me, bad things have happened to me, maybe they'll happen again. And sometimes that crept in sometimes, like, do I deserve this? Is it going to get taken away? And that was quite horrible experience, sometimes thinking that. It's when my husband had gone back to work, I'd think things like that when I was on my own. But then I, you know, when I've looked at forums and read other people's experience, who haven't had other traumas, they have had those moments where that has clouded them as well. So, yeah, it sounds really awful, doesn't it, to think that? But I just think terrible things.
So. I think it's a sign of how precious something is to you if you start to become preoccupied with losing it. I think that's really natural. Yeah.
I think you're right. You know, like crazy intrusive thoughts when you're like going to baby sensory and you decide to walk and you're like, what if a car hits the buggy?
Yeah.
You're like, it's just really weird. Then you're like, I'm crazy. Let's stop at Costa and let's stop being crazy.
Let's have another latte. I remember I used to work with a woman who, when she had her first, her husband would say goodbye, kiss them goodbye in the morning. And then she'd be so terrified to carry the baby down the stairs that she would just stay in their bedroom all day.
Oh, I get that. I do get that.
I completely get that. At the time, I didn't have kids and I thought, you crackerjack woman, what are you going on about? Now I'm like, I completely get that. Of course that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's such a big responsibility.
But I remember the first time I went to see you, Annie, because Katie, Annie and I had our children by some miraculous fate of...
divine intervention.
8 hours and nothing else apart. 8 hours to the minute apart, her son and my daughter. And so we met up when they were like 5 weeks old. And I just remember going into London to see him and being utterly paralysed with fear that I was going to do something or drop Chloe on the train or just
leave her on the tube.
Totally get that. Yeah. Yeah. But then it's so different second time round, don't you think?
Oh, God. The second one just got laid on the living room floor while we got hoovered round her while she was on the floor.
And it's like you just go out and about meeting friends wearing like leaking everywhere and you're fine. You might even wear like a pale trouser and you're just like, it's just.
And with the first one, you're so paranoid about routines and, you know, you've got to let them sleep. The second one, you're like, oh, you're breathing. Good. Right. Off we go.
Yeah. It's so. And also, I was really conscious because like Belle, you know, my first, was kind of obsessed with her. She was on a pedestal, light of our lives. And I always felt worried pregnant. Will I love the second one as much? That was a genuine. And my mum was like, no, you just do. Don't worry. It's fine. And I was like, are you sure? And then as soon as she was born, I was like, okay, I get it. Love them both equally. There's
yes,
no
I forgot that feeling. I forgot.
Yeah.
That.
It's but so when P arrived, I was so worried about making Belle feel pushed out because she'd been my golden girl, you know. And we got all these books done with like, I'm a big sister. My name's Belle, all personalised and stuff. And we got the big sister T-shirt and pyjamas. And Belle was fine. She wasn't jealous at all. Like she's probably only started being jealous now when they're sort of like actually play together and snatch off each other and stuff like that.
That means you did something right.
Yeah, really? Okay, that's good. Because I never know. I never know. I'm just like making it all up.
Well, I just think other mums, we need to big each other up because our kids are never going to turn around and say, oh, thanks, mummy. You did such a great job today that we have to pat each other on the back when it sounds like it's going right. Now, obviously, I know you don't want to be put on a pedestal, but you have kind of become this kind of icon for survivors and for, kind of a beacon of resilience. Are you grateful in any, this sounds dreadful, not are you grateful for what happened to you, but are you grateful for the place you're in now and how enlightened and positive and together you feel?
I'm grateful for the people in my life because I believe it's the support network you have that enables you because, you know, doing anything alone, whether it's parenthood, careers, mental health, physical, medical recoveries, it is about the friends, family and the professionals. So, yeah, no doubt without the people that are in my life now, I wouldn't be who I am today. But no, I don't ever look back on life events and think, oh, I'm grateful for those because that's not how I believe. You know, I think it is blood, sweat and tears and it is grit and determination that gets you where you are. So, and again, I don't believe in luck. So I wouldn't say, oh, I feel lucky. I feel like, you know, if I want something in life, I go out and get it and I work hard and so do the people around me.
So has becoming a mum made it harder in a way in that you can see what it must have been like for your mum to go through, to see you suffer? And we know that she tells you off about your grammar, but having the idea of seeing my little girl go through anything, even a tenth of what you went through as a mum, that must just kill you now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, even just like when I was on maternity leave with the first child, I was at home for the first few weeks and I just kind of like texted my mum, like, oh God, you know, like me as a teenager, really sorry about that now, like feeling really bad. You know, like all the cider and the cigarettes and the jumping out the window and the boyfriend when I was 14 and who was like 20. Yes. You know, really sorry about that. I understand now. And then, yeah, like looking back on everything that she saw me go through as a young adult, like, felt so bad, so guilty, like how traumatic, like almost how more traumatic for her than me, because there's visuals that she saw me in a coma that I didn't even see, you know, and I don't know how to cope if it was my child. And yeah, it was a whole other chapter in my life of realization, guilt, sadness, admiration for my mom, in awe of my mom, realizing how fortunate I am to have the mom that I have.
Yeah. I almost feel like you're kind of destined to have the parents that you have. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and my mum is like very stoic. She's very firm. She's typical British, stiff upper lip. And sometimes when I was younger, I used to get cross with my mum because she was so harsh. And now I look back and be like, it was the best mum for me. My mum made me. She's not gushy. She's not weak. She's very strong, and it really, really helped me. I wouldn't have been able to get through what I got through if I didn't have a mum like that.
This might be a difficult question to answer, but how do you feel about the people who did this to you now?
It's not something I think about. You know, I'm like, anyone that's read my self-help books knows that I'm this constantly talking about this present tense, you know, living in the past feels like depression, living in the future feels like anxiety. And I very much live in present tense. So it isn't something I'd go back and give a lot of thought to. You know, there's so much going on in my life now to focus on. I just don't really have the mental capacity and the headspace to put my energies into the past like that.
That's good. I like that answer.
As I answered that, my husband just walked in and brought me a glass of wine. Like, what?
Well, there
what
you go. There you go. That's perfect.
Now, always one to bring things down a notch or two, I'm going to stop talking about emotions and start talking about scented candles. First of all, by the time this podcast is out for the whole world to listen to, you'll have a new range of fragrance, candle and diffuser in Superdrug, if I'm right. Mm-hmm. And you've also added another string to your bow. You've got a beauty range, which is lovely because it feels like it's almost full circle. You were a model and you suffered your injuries and now you're back doing something you did before. So tell us about your new stuff, please.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it was a business venture I started 2 years ago because it's quite a long process. So years, I mean, a long, long time ago, my actual qualification was as a beauty therapist and I studied aromatherapy. So I kind of understand all about different top notes, base notes and what different plants and remedies can do. And I wanted to bring something to market that was around self-care. You know, all the different items have affirmations and different emotions and words kind of affiliated to them. And when lockdown happened, obviously a lot of my kind of work got halted and business partners and people I was working with had delays on production. And one of the things I thought I could do whilst I was in lockdown was read a daily affirmation every day, taken from my affirmation book. And it was kind of built this community in my DMs and on my stories of sharing quotes and self-care techniques and practices with one another. And I only really have female followers. The only men that follow me are gay. Like, no one fancies me. No male love at all, which is fine. And we just built this community and it was really timely because I thought, okay, I'm bringing this stuff out and it is all around self-care. And sometimes, you know, when you're a mum, self-care can't be a weekend at a spa. It just isn't, is it?
It's getting to go to the loo by yourself without and asking you for something.
One of my mum friends is WhatsApping us from a super duper spa this evening.
Jealous.
Nobody is replying with anything else. Everything under the sun.
Yeah, fuming. And you know, sometimes self-care for me literally is, sat on the edge of the bed tonight and put on some foot cream and let it absorb.
That sounds pretty rock and roll.
Yeah, because normally I can't let it absorb. I have to run across the carpet, get fluff on it to go and, like, you know, pick someone's teddy that fell out the cot, you know. So, yeah, there's a whole different range of all these affirmations, different products and stuff to get people to treat themselves, buy it for other women, you know, as little gifts, stocking fillers, just to take a moment and say, you know, I can actually do something for myself. And for me as a businesswoman, I really loved, I went to the factory, I was involved in the mixology, I was involved in sourcing stuff, the design, the packaging. And, you know, everyone, when they interview me and talk to me, primarily they want to talk to me about me being attacked. And I'm like, do you know what? I've got so many other skills and talents, yes, and things that I did before I was burnt and that I can bring to market and work on and do. And working in a team in business like this is what I really enjoy and what I'm really good at. And it, in my mind, that's what defines me and that's who I am. So to be working on this project, again, it does go back to what I'm passionate about, but people wouldn't necessarily associate me with that.
I think it's good to keep people guessing and let them be a bit surprised by you sometimes.
Absolutely.
So this is going to bring me to my last question for you, which is, Katie Piper, how do you want to be remembered? If you have to go down in history for anything, is it as Belle & P's mum? Is it as this person who gave a face to strength and resilience and paved the way for others to see a way forward through difficult times? Or is it something completely unexpected? That is it to climb Everest and we just haven't heard that one about you yet?
No way. I just like to drink wine. I can't climb Everest. No, it's going to, I don't know how to articulate this without sounding big-headed or worthy. But I want to be remembered for making a change and a movement around the way we view people that are visibly different. Because, you know, in the first instance when journalists would talk to me, it was, well, what are you going to do now? Now you look different. How are you ever going to feel attractive? Are you going to get married? What will you do for a living? And it was really sad that what not being symmetrical and having scarred skin and having a funny eye means to the world, because actually you can be sexy, you can be the CEO, you can be a trailblazer, you can be the person who everyone wants to buy the dress that you wore. And I find it really sad that in Western society, they just feel like there's so many limits placed on you because you don't fit these idealistic standards. And I'm not saying that I'm the trailblazer, but I was burnt 12 years ago. And now in 2020, we do see people like me advertising shampoo. We do see girls in underwear adverts with scars. Mm. And Instagram is changing. You can follow loads of pages where you see a wide variety of different bodies, different race, different shapes, sizes, skin textures. And it's so bloody good. And I really hope
that. So good.
Yeah, it's really good. And like being a mother of daughters, like there is positive places for them on the internet. There is safe spaces. There is freedom to be different and for it to be aspirational. Because when I was at school, we just fundraised for people like me in assembly and that was where it stopped. Mm-hmm. And I think it's changing. I think, you know, girls ask me where I got my hair scrunchie from and what shade of lipstick I'm wearing. And my lips were rebuilt from the skin off my groin. And I'm so happy they want to wear the same matte lipstick as me.
I love that. Of all the places.
Hairy lips, yeah. Really hairy lips.
That's brilliant.
Now, Katie, we always ask our guests this question as we round up the pod, and it sounds a bit weird, but basically what we want you to do is imagine you're tucking Annie and I into bed and sing us your family lullaby.
Oh my God. Well, you're going to absolutely well. I'm going to sound like a real crazy person now. We actually sing religious songs at night. So they've got this kids' prayer book of Amazon's. They do a prayer. And then we've got this favourite song that we sung at my wedding. We sing it in the car and stuff. Do I really have to sing it?
Yeah,
now?
Come on. We're all ears. I'm lying down. Go on.
Okay, world exclusive. This could end up being a single in the future. Collaboration.
Come on, yes.
How great is our God? Sing with me, how great, how great is our God? He's the name of all things great. He is worthy of our praise. And my heart will sing, how great is our God? For the kids to sing it back to me. We sing it together.
That's so gorgeous. I love that. Well, I feel very relaxed now. I could go to sleep.
Say, are you asleep?
I want a Christmas Songs of Praise album next Christmas, please.
Oh, yes.
I collaborate.
Well, you could do like backing vocals, maybe.
Okay, yeah. Or we could click our fingers at least. I think that's about as far as Wendy and I can go.
No, that's Anne being really kind, because all you want me to do is click my fingers, trust me.
Oh dear, I'm glad I had the wine.
Cry? That's just lovely. I get goosebumps when I watch Songs of Praise, so there we go. I want your album, please. For Christmas 2021, we'd like an album of songs.
No pressure.
Okay. No pressure at all. Katie, thank you so much.
Thank you. It was lovely to spend my Friday night with you. I really enjoyed it.
Now go and enjoy those fish and chips. Get them while they're warm.
I will do. Take care. Thanks.
Bye, Katie.
Bye. Bye.